Hello and welcome to the Sewers of Paris. The topic this week is Pippin, the Paul Lynde Halloween special, and playing with dolls. My guest this week is Cam Clark, who grew up in a showbiz family that's been entertaining audiences since the early 30s. If you're not familiar with his work as one of the youngest members of the King family singers, you might know him as the voice of Leonardo on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or as Canada from Akira, or as Liquid Snake in Metal Gear. He's been the voice of He-Man, Simba, Jen from The Dark Crystal, and hundreds of other roles. Cam's always had a gift for voices and song, and not just with the sound of his voice, but with the words he's found to express who he truly is. Cam was kind enough to invite me to his home for this interview, where we talked about growing up in a Mormon showbiz family, struggling to come out and find his place in the world, and why he has a gorgeous collection of Barbie dolls. We'll have that conversation in a minute. First, a big thanks to everyone who makes the Sewers of Paris possible with a pledge of support on Patreon. Head over to sewersofparis.com and click Support the Show on Patreon to join the folks who make the podcast possible, and to check out the rewards for backers. And a reminder that The Sewers of Paris is on Twitter and Facebook. I post clips of the stuff that we talk about on each episode, so you can follow the show on social media to get a look at the stuff that guests recommend. And by the way, I'm heading to Chicago this month with my comedy storytelling show Queens of Adventure, featuring drag queens playing Dungeons & Dragons. We're doing two live shows at Hamburger Mary's Attic, the first on October 9th with local Chicago queens Lucy Stuhl, Foxy Kim, and Joe Lewis, and the second on October 16th with Seattle legends Arsenicki, Beautilino Kipple, and Freya Love. Tickets are now on sale at queensofadventure.com. Now, here's Cam. Cam, thanks so much for joining me. I know you grew up in a family where entertainment was just constantly being made around you. Was there any culture in particular that stood out as being life-changing?
So, I didn't have a life to be changed because it was always that. Mm. I mean, there were certain movies or books or songs that I was like, you know, schwat.
Okay, well, let's talk about those.
Okay.
Like, what? So you were surrounded by sort of like mass media variety show kind of culture.
Yeah, which was huge in my generation too. I mean, every night of the week, there were stars had these musical variety shows with comedy sketches and music and singers and dancers and the whole thing. You know, Carol Burnett, Red Skelton, Flip Wilson, Andy Williams, the Osmonds, you know, the King family.
Right. There you are. Like in the middle of it.
And there I am, back to me.
What did you feel like this is just normal life?
Yeah.
This is what people do is they go on variety shows.
Yeah. And it was a rude awakening to find out that not everybody has Christmases that are all singing, all dancing like we did on a television show. Mm-hmm.
Was it just constant show? Like, did you have what people would recognize as like normal kid life, or were you just like it was on the road or on stage?
We were on stage all summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the road all summer, on stage. But because we were with there were 36 of us in the show. My mom was one of eight children, and it was these kids and their children, their families. Mm-hmm. Because we were traveling with our siblings and our cousins and aunts and uncles, it didn't have like the horror stories of a Judy Garland or fill in the blank who was not guarded by their family or they were alone on a show. I mean, I have friends who were child stars as well who don't have a nickel of the money. Mm-hmm. You know, their parents took their money, blah, blah, blah. And they would be alone. I mean, they would have their television families, but because this was a real family, I still had that grounding, if you can, you know, call it that. And I was in studio school, but not all the time. I went to public school as well, so had a nice mix of that.
So what did you mentioned there were like the little side things that you like were kind of like were glimmers of interest for you that weren't a part of the shows that you were doing and like the very mass market kind of culture that you were a part of. Like you're doing like basically like pop songs and
pop songs, Broadway songs. Mm-hmm. And they were all like fresh from Broadway. I mean, we're singing Fiddler when Fiddler had just opened the season before, you know, or Sound of Music. And what was interesting is back in my generation, Broadway albums, families had them. It was families bought Hello Dolly, and they listened to Hello Dolly. They listened to Fiddler or Sound of Music. It was part of, you know, they had, you know, Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, and the original Broadway cast to South Pacific. It was part of your musical growing up. It wasn't just like, you know, for theater people or gay people. Mm-hmm. Families knew that stuff.
Right. Those were the stories that people just told and that we were familiar with.
Yeah.
Did you like those stories?
You're talking about like Broadway?
Well, yeah. Did you like Broadway stuff, like as a kid?
Stuff. I wasn't crazy about Carousel or South Pacific, King and I. I remember in seventh grade in choir, I had a wonderful choir director. And he, in our spring show, he introduced us to Godspell.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that must have been brand new.
It was probably like a year or two old.
Yeah.
And he put this record, this LP, on his stereo in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And I died and went to heaven hearing this score to this... You know, and in our little show, we did Day by Day, which a lot of people know that song. And I remember auditioning for a quartet of another song from the show, All Good Gifts. Mm-hmm. And I got that. And
it's a real crooner. It's a ballad.
Oh, and I got my Equity card many, many years later. Mm-hmm. Doing a company of playing Jesus in a company of Godspell. I had the hair for it. I had the afro, the big blonde curly afro.
Okay.
So,
I also played Jesus in Godspell when I was in high school.
Well, no wonder I like you so much.
Yes. We did it. I also had the hair for it. I had like hair down to my shoulders. And
yeah.
So it was very like, and we did the full clown thing. So
yeah.
It was like,
yeah. So did we. Yeah. So did we.
Oh gosh.
And I played that album to death and memorized every song on that record. So mm-hmm. the music of my parents, I sang professionally, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was Hello Dolly or Fiddler, and a lot of that music fit our family so well. I mean, we did a regular number we did was from Fiddler was Sunrise Sunset mm-hmm. because we had the children and the parents, and it's like straight out of the show itself,
except with Gentiles. Well, yeah, it does change. I will say, like, the little town that I grew up in Connecticut, did Fiddler as well, and everyone doing those like accents and talking about that culture, just like something about it felt like it wasn't quite the right match. They also did Once on This Island, and oh my goodness, the accents that came out of that one.
But funny. Yeah, we did in a Thanksgiving episode of our show, we did Tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, from Fiddler.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hilarious because mm-hmm. my family is about as Anglo as it gets. All these blonde, blue-eyed people up there singing. And in the part where the sons sing, was it? Help me with it. I started Hebrew school, so we changed it to, at nine I started music school, so it's pretty hilarious.
Wow. Well, you know, it's like, that reminds me of when schools that are like all white, for example, do Hairspray or something like that.
Yeah.
Like some, the culture just doesn't quite match the content.
Yeah.
So you were like in the middle of all this stuff. Did you get what these shows were about and the songs?
I remember what I consider the first musical that was mine, mm-hmm. you know, that wasn't from my parents' generation, because again, even with Godspell, I was too young. Mm-hmm. It was the kids just older than me, you know, 10 mm-hmm. years older or whatever were on stage doing it. My aunt took me to see Chorus Line when it was first came to LA.
Yeah.
And I was...
Can you?
It was crazy. You know, it was naughty and I was embarrassed. But I would have to say that the show that knocked you, that whooped you upside the head mm-hmm. was Pippin. Mm-hmm. The first time I heard Corner of the Sky, it was like a gay anthem to me. Mm-hmm. You know, my generation and kids older than me and kids after me, I'm sure, still felt like they needed to be someplace else to be free. Mm-hmm. And the opening chords of that song, and I just weep to this day.
Mm-hmm. Everything has its season, everything has its time. Show me a reason and I'll soon show you a rhyme. Cats fit on the windowsill, children fit in the snow. Why do I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go? Rivers belong where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can fly. I've got to be where my spirit can run free. Gotta find my corner of the sky.
That is probably the strongest song in musical theater for me. And then later in college, I got to play Pippin. And one of the highlights of my career is this little off-campus production in this theater that was haunted. Mm-hmm. You know, this old, from the 1920s, brick theater. It was perfect for that show. Mm-hmm. Rickety old theater with velvet seats and all of that. But that song, Rivers Belong Where They Can Ramble, Eagles Belong Where They Can Fly, I've Got to Be Where My Spirit Can Run Free, Gotta Find My Corner of the Sky. At 15, 16, whatever age I was, I went, this is, to use another lyric, this is killing me softly.
How did you know that you weren't in your corner? How did you know that you needed to go find something?
Well, I've known I was gay or that I was different since Paul McCartney was on Ed Sullivan's show and mm-hmm. I went, something tickles funny, mother. So I pretty much always knew.
Mm-hmm. Before you knew what it was.
Before
it
I knew what it was. Yeah. I just knew that I had crushes on boy things and boy people. Mm-hmm. Boy people as opposed to girl
sure.
people.
Right. That was a problem.
Yeah.
Was there anything in your environment that like told you what gay was and that it was bad, or was it just like something?
Yeah, I was raised Mormon, mm-hmm. and I think in a lot of organized religions, be it Catholic or others, you know, that gay was wrong and bad, and you were going to go to hell. So that was a challenge to how am I going to turn straight? And in the meantime, a fantasy like that song, Corner of the Sky, was an escape fantasy that if I can be anywhere but where I am. And I had a great childhood and nobody was giving me grief because, well, nobody knew my secret.
Mm-hmm. You were giving yourself a lot of grief, though.
Oh,
knowing.
Yeah. Well, and I was getting a lot of grief from the pulpit, you know, from the Bible thumping and all of that. Not from my parents, but I had, you know, I read the scriptures and their interpretation of it. And
being in show business, did you encounter other gay people, or was that still just not talked about? Because, you know, today we think of like, well, you know, all the gays go to a drama club.
Well, most of my work was with my family, and I'm the only gay one in that huge monstrosity. I'm the only gay person.
And there were like 36 of you, right?
Yeah.
How could you have been the only one?
Well, to this day, I've not seen telltale signs of any of those that are, you know, around. We had a couple of choreographers that were gay, but I was a kid.
You were dressed by Bob Mackie.
Indeed, it's true.
I mean, so they were there, they were all around you, but I guess it's not like Bob Mackie's coming in like with his boyfriend or something.
No, I wouldn't have known from that. And because I didn't do theater as a young person outside of my family or a little high school stuff. And I was also working professionally in high school doing these Mormon pop musicals. One I toured around for 2 years called Saturday's Warrior, which was kind of almost like a Mormon contemporary of its day, Pippin, mm-hmm. about finding yourself, but it was about finding your way through Jesus's.
There's sort of a foregone conclusion about what you're supposed to find.
Yeah. I'm sure there were gay kids in that. I mean, I know after the fact, mm-hmm. but we were all closeted Christian boys, right. and it was never my good fortune to fall into an evil relationship at that young age. I wish I had, but so it didn't present itself.
The opportunities that could have been, I have the same feeling of like...
It just didn't present itself.
I'm sure that like we look, before we started recording, we were looking at like a lot of the art and like stuff that you've collected from your childhood. And you definitely like had an eye for the stuff that was attractive to you.
Yeah.
And you've kind of like surrounded yourself with it now. Like you've collected a lot of art that was meaningful to you even when you were young.
Yeah.
What was the stuff that like drew you in? Like that you knew this is doing something for me and I don't know why, but it is.
Hilary Knight, who was known most famously for Eloise, mm-hmm. the little girl who grew up in the Plaza?
That
hotel?
Sounds right. Yeah. With the cute little hat, right?
Yeah. He illustrated a version of Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. And I found the illustrations, and I'm pretty sure you can fact check this. I think he was gay. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure.
The attention to physique in his work leads me to think.
Oh my gosh. And these illustrations, it was one of the first books I had. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about maybe 5 or 6 years old. Mm. And I was aware that there was something going on in these illustrations that I found very sexual, mm. even though I didn't know what that was. Mm. He was wonderful, his illustrations, but I knew something was up mm. with his stuff.
Well, in Beauty and the Beast, I mean, that's a story that has spoken to a lot of young gay people. Like,
yeah.
Take me away from, I live in this common world and please like sweep me off my feet, but monster. And I mustn't want it. And yet I do.
Oh yeah, yeah. There you go.
I'm sure there's nothing psychologically going on there. but yeah, you showed me the picture of the monster and it's this like cloven hooved,
sexy demon guy. Yeah. Yeah, he looks like a ballet dancer.
Right. Simultaneously, like this monster who's also like leaping gracefully. Like,
yeah.
And so like we all have those things that like kind of speak to us. And so when you heard the song in Pippin, that other people have longings, other people yearn for things.
Yeah.
Did you know what you wanted to seek out, or did you even have an urge to be like, I got to leave this all behind and go find myself?
Well, I figured my being gay was a phase, mm-hmm. That I'd grow out of it, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So I would fantasize about that song and that role. And then John Rubinstein had his picture all over the album of Pippin, and I had such a crush on him. Mm-hmm. He was so adorable.
Yeah. That like that was the like the very blonde, very, like...
No,
very...
no, actually, he had dark, curly, brown... hair.
Okay.
John Rubinstein.
Okay. Maybe I'm picturing the wrong part, like very chiseled jaw, kind of like, I'm definitely picturing someone from Godspell. I'm thinking of someone from Godspell.
Are you thinking of the movie version of Godspell had, oh, crap, help me out
no,
here.
No, I know, the guy, he's in so many things.
He's so many things now, and he had a big curly blonde fro, yes. And I thought I'd found Jesus when actually I had... Had a crush on the actor. Oh, well.
We remember his hair.
Insert famous name here.
We'll do a little insert. Yeah. Okay. So you like were drawn in by the...
Yeah,
by
but
the
I knew I was going to ultimately come out straight. And I served a mission for the Mormon church, just like Book of Mormon. For those of you that have seen that musicale and was promised by the church leaders that if I did this, I would come home magically straight.
Oh, dear.
Whee!
Oh, dear.
Yeah, didn't happen. Mm. So I sent myself, unbeknownst to my parents, to shock treatment, to aversion therapy. Sent myself, which was a horrific experience.
Yeah.
But that didn't work either.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Surprise, surprise.
How long did you do that for?
I went for one semester. I went up to Brigham Young University because I'd heard there was a doctor off campus up there who practiced it. So I was at BYU for 2 semesters so that I could pursue this therapy. Mm.
At what point were you like, I've had enough?
Well, at the end of the second semester, I went, this isn't working. And I dated up a storm and I felt nothing. There's another song, mm-hmm. you know, from bring it back to Chorus Line. Mm-hmm. That song is strikes home. You know, that's you're supposed to feel one thing. And every day for a week, I would try to feel the wind rush. You know, that whole thing spoke to me like, every day I would try to feel aroused and it mm-hmm. just didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I went, oh, well.
So you're at BYU for the purpose of basically straightening yourself out.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then I began the journey of trying to navigate gay life in the 80s, mm-hmm. pre-AIDS, yeah. and then during the AIDS crisis. Yeah.
Did you stay in Salt Lake or did you come back?
No, I came back here because I knew I was either going to be an illustrator, mm-hmm. and I went to Otis Parsons Design School to study that, or I was going to be a movie star. And that didn't happen, but the voiceover thing, I kind of tripped backwards and fell into that pot of gold, and it's been a lovely, lovely career.
Did you have like a breakup with trying to be straight, or a breakup with Mormonism, or was it just sort of a slow thing of like, I just need less and less and less and less of this?
I think a little of both. I mean, I left the church mm-hmm. right after that. Mm-hmm. You know, I came home and I went, well, this ain't for me.
That must have been really difficult, like after all that time, and how much like the family was an important part
of it. Yeah, and my family is still very, most of them are still very into the church.
Mm-hmm. What did you fill that gap with?
I didn't. I'm not a religious person. Mm-hmm. Depending on your definition of what a spiritual person is, I feel closer to the Druids. Mm-hmm. I'm a tree hugger, literally. Mm-hmm. And that's when I feel there's something bigger than us, but I'm not a believer in Christianity and that whole world. I left that behind.
Systems, it seems like human systems were a problem. Natural systems might be more appealing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're recording this at your house, and there's like a lovely tree as I was coming up, like this lovely tree that just like stretches up over the front door of your home. And
yeah, I planted
gorgeous.
That.
Oh, did you really? Wow,
and it looks
it's
like
so
it's
big.
1,000 years old.
Yeah.
As am I. Look at that tree and you'll know how old I am.
You count the rings.
And I hug it.
Do you really?
I hug it.
Oh, that's really
Are you
really
frightened?
Sweet.
Are you very frightened right now?
No, I live in the Pacific Northwest, so I'm accustomed
to it. So jealous.
To,
yeah. So jealous.
It is, you know, I lived in LA for a long time, and one of the things that got me out of here was like, there's just not enough nature.
Yeah.
You can just like go for hours without seeing a tree.
Yeah.
And so when my partner and I were looking for a new place to live, we drove around the country and looked at a bunch of cities, and I was like, which one had the most trees, basically?
Yeah.
And that's what got us
beautiful.
There. Yeah. So like, did you coming back here and becoming a druid essentially? I mean, that was a good
no time. Human sacrifices.
Good. Okay,
let me get that on the record.
Great.
But you know, just I believe in the seasons of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in nature and her being swallowed up by other things. And
well, I mean, for so long you'd been denying your nature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it makes sense that you'd want to be like, okay, let's just be honest about what's going on here. Let's have some respect for the natural way for a thing to be, including you.
Yeah.
When you came back to LA, did you, you said you're either going to be an illustrator, you're going to be an actor, and how did one of those win over the other?
Because the art school was too hard.
Okay. That'll do it.
I mean, I did have a couple of books that I illustrated and wrote, mm-hmm. and a line of greeting cards, actually. Oh. But my brother, while I was on my mission, I came home and he was now working at Warner Brothers mm-hmm. in post-production, and he needed some voices to do background work mm-hmm. on the TV show that he was working on. And I started doing that for him. That's things like fight grunts and hospital pages and police radio and... Mm-hmm. You know, train announcements, mm-hmm. All that stuff is laid in after the fact.
Right.
And I met this person and that person and another person. And there was a woman and her husband that I met on this one gig. And she said, "You're pretty good at this. Have you thought about maybe doing voiceovers for a career?" And I went, "That's great, but no, I'm going to be a movie star." And she goes, "Yeah, well, in the meantime."
And that's very gentle.
She set me up with her agent and a vocal coach, and I never looked back.
Okay. Were there roles, you know, I imagine like train conductor and police radio were not like the most fulfilling, but like, did you find something that that you were like, oh, I actually really love this?
Doing the animation work was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So, no, doing the background voices, and it's what I do to this day. Mm-hmm. And I work with some wonderful people, but it's not the same as doing like narrations for books or, you know, games became a lot of fun as they grew up as a genre. Mm-hmm. Where acting was now involved as opposed to just, and I don't know the lingo, but as opposed to just shooter games where it was just
sure
keeping score, you know, and all the different ways you can kill something. Mm-hmm. I mean, there came to be stories and stuff, so that was fun. But I did enjoy doing my, you know, the theater. I still was involved in theater and musicals and stuff like that, which I loved a lot.
Where did you find yourself feeling at home?
I don't know if I ever have. I don't know if I ever did. I will say that I, and partially because of my family upbringing and where music was always in the home, the two things that I have produced for over 30 years now, without missing a year, I have a Christmas party, which is a musical party where all the furniture is taken out of the living room. Everybody comes in and there's a program with sing, you know, because all my friends are, most of them are in the entertainment business. So there's songs and choral numbers. And we rehearse starting in September to get ready for this. It's just a party.
I love this so much.
It's just a party.
It's a party, but you have to rehearse for it for several months?
Oh, that's, yeah. Oh, well, God. I grew up, my mom, she grew up with the studio singers. I mean, she was a band singer. Mm-hmm. And every Christmas, they did it. So I was just carrying on the tradition of my Hollywood upbringing. Mm-hmm. And then we have, we sing carols the whole room and blow the roof off and parodies of, you know, numbers. My brother and I did a couple of years ago, we did the song Sisters from White Christmas with, and I went over to Bob Mackey's shop and I said, I need two giant ostrich fans.
Okay.
And I need earrings because we're going to be doing, you know, Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye. I was Danny Kaye and my brother was Bing. And, you know, did the choreography the exact same and used the record so it would be just like the movie.
Uh-huh.
With the ladies and gentlemen now introducing the, I don't remember what the sisters, but the Huffington sisters. Yeah. Anyway, and the other thing I do is every year I have a Halloween party. Mm-hmm. Which I call a reader's party. And it's not for everybody, but people who love literature. We read spooky short stories. They're assigned, and people work them up every year. I control my world because the costume party is always a theme. Mm-hmm. Or it's a color. You can be anything you want, but this is the palette.
Okay.
So that it's like being in a Zeffirelli movie so the whole house, all the people in it are, whether it's, well, like I did Emerald City.
Oh, man.
So you had to be citizens of Oz.
Oh, what a dream. Oh,
and my people know that they will not be invited back if they don't pull out all the stops.
Yeah.
Or it's just like it's black and orange. You can be anything you want, but it's black, orange, gray, white. Mm-hmm. And so again, it looks like a Bob Mackey, it looks like a Paul Lynde Halloween special.
Hopefully a little better, maybe a little more coordinated than that.
Yes, inside joke.
Yeah. we've discussed the special on the show before. Yeah. It's come up. Wow. So like, there's just so much pageantry to that. I love it. But, and it's on your terms because you can be like, literally you're telling people like what palette to go with and you're giving them the material to rehearse. And so you can create the experience.
And even at the Halloween party, there's been music as well. When we did Emerald City, I found an old ragtime song called The Moan. I don't know who wrote it, but look it up. Mm-hmm. and I had four of us perform it. It's like some, it's like it would have been, it sounds like a Scott Joplin song. And my friends get behind it.
Wow, that's great. Well, I mean, clearly you have the right kind of people around you.
Yeah. And it's not for everybody, and that's cool. Yeah. If it's not your jam, then don't. I'm not offended, but you don't want to be here because you'll be bored out of your mind. You know, if it's not your thing.
Do you have like I don't know if this is like overthinking it, but like, is there a an overriding and overarching aesthetic to that, like year over year? That is there like a feel that you're trying to evoke from all of the parties?
I am trying to hold on to Camelot. I came from a glamorous Hollywood world where music was the center of it, and glamour is a thing of the past. You know, you're lucky to go to the theater and see not everybody in flip-flops. I was born about 50 years too late because, you know, I love dressing up, and, you know, I have suit jackets and ties in my closet that are gathering dust and cobwebs because, you know, nobody wears that stuff.
Right, right. You don't wear a tie to the theater anymore.
Yeah.
When you talk about like you love dressing up, we're saying this like, and just across the room from us is a case full of Barbies.
Barbies.
Yeah. How is that? Why is that?
Well, that's kind of my FU to boy toys and girl toys. My parents had no problems with me asking for Barbies for my birthday or for Christmas. They gave them to me, no questions asked. Which was very ahead of their time to let a child play with what they want.
Why did you want Barbies?
Why not? In fact, there's a cartoon on my fridge in New York, a cartoon that shows a little boy and a little girl in a sandbox playing with a truck. And I'm going to screw this up, but it's something like the little boy says, "Well, I don't think of it as a boy thing as much as a liking trucks thing." And I went, yeah. So with Barbies, it's a liking Barbies thing. I love miniatures. And a lot of my collections that I have are miniatures. You know, be it trains, Hot Wheels, Matchbox. I'm fascinated by, you know.
What is that? Like, what is it about miniatures?
I don't know. But the Barbies are just, I love playing with dolls. But I also love playing with Matchbox cars and Hot Wheels.
Right, so it's not like, oh, well, I must do what the gender roles tell me to do.
Yeah.
It's like, I just like these toys.
And on my website last year on my birthday, I posted a photograph of me with a bunch of my little friends, and it was my birthday, and I'd received a Mary Poppins gift set, which had a little, by Horseman was the toy maker, had Mary Poppins doll, and with like four of her outfits from the movie. And the response to from followers about what their parents allowed or wouldn't allow them to have as children. And then, you know, the discussion of creativity and letting a child create and imagine what works for them. And how, for a lot of families, things have changed now. And what the child wants is, you know, they don't interfere. But, you know, I also had my pop guns. But I was wearing jungle red nail polish while I used my cowboy guns.
Sure. Well, you gotta look your best when you're going.
When you're fighting engines.
What? So did Barbie, like, it was a part of your life as a kid, and then was there like, you know, for I think a lot of queer people, there's that moment where you're like, oh no, I must put away these things. And
well, it was a deep dark secret that I even had Barbies, and my little friends didn't know. Just my little cousins, my little girl cousins that I played dolls with knew, but I hid them. You know, these dolls were like under a floorboard pretty much. And, you know, you grow out of toys, and I didn't give it much of another thought until I stumbled on a toy show about 30 years ago. And every bone in my body started to quiver and shake, and I started collecting the dolls back. And I made this display of them in my living room as kind of like an FU to boys can't play with dolls. And for my whole childhood, they were a horrible secret. But now they're on display because, you know, get over it.
You described it as like your whole body was like quivering and shaking. And that feels like it could either be like the, a combination of like, I must fear this. I've had that feeling as well when I'm like indulging something that feels like I shouldn't like this. And yet I do. And am I wrong? Is there something wrong with me? But there's also that like that tug that just says, no, make yourself follow your bliss, make yourself happy.
Yeah.
When have there been like other things? Cause you're a collector and you've got like a lot of things around you. So what gives you that feeling? That deep in your core, quivering that excitement of this is what I want. This is what I want to have around me.
I think it was a midlife crisis. Collecting the toys was buying back my childhood.
Mm-hmm. But there's, I think the things that brought you joy in your childhood, because there's also like you're not buying back, like putting them in display. You're not like buying back the closet.
No, but in the other room, it's all the toys. It's boy toys and girl toys and lunch boxes and anything a child could have played with of either sex.
Mm-hmm.
Like just buying back my youth and my childhood was so redonkulous.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no comparing it to anything else to have that very strange experience. When you say you're buying it back, are you making up for lost time, or maybe another way to say that is
it's like a time machine.
Mm-hmm.
I still read my Charlie Brown books and they make me feel like I'm there.
Mm.
You know, I feel like even though childhood comes with its own, you know, trials and tribulations of and they're as real as anything for a grown up in your little child's brain, it just feels simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Schulz was an idol to me. I gobbled up everything peanuts that there was, and to then years later be cast as Snoopy when they animated the musical Snoopy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to sing all that music and work with Lee Mendelson, who was the producer of Great Pumpkin, and Charlie Brown Christmas was a dream come true.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what it must have felt like to like get that call and be like, no, it's you. You're Snoopy.
It was unbelievable.
Tell me about some of your roles that like that have been unbelievable.
Snoopy was by far the jewel in my crown because it was a full circle, coming full circle to my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I've had other fun roles and stuff, and I have favorite roles, but I created them pretty much. So it's not like I get to play that famous something, something, something. It was a new invention that I had no idea if it was going to be a hit or not. So it was fun to do, but it didn't, you know, didn't hold anything special.
Doesn't it hold something special to create something?
Yeah, but it wasn't like a brass ring. It was, as an actor, you know, you audition for things and you read a script and you go, ooh, I'd love to do this. But it's not like maybe you've always wanted to be Tevye in Fiddler or Fagin in Oliver, or for me, okay, getting to play Jesus in Godspell and getting to play Pippin in Pippin, doing Butterflies Are Free and having the lead in that, and also The Hasty Heart, the theater roles that I was already familiar with, those were exciting.
It sounds like those were things that had a lot of valence for you already. So had you seen them like in other contexts? Like you'd seen Pippin and that was deeply meaningful. So.
Yeah, and I saw Hasty Heart with Gregory Harrison at downtown LA at the Amundsen Theater or wherever it was. And then when the audition came for that at a small theater here in LA, I was jazzed to get that.
Have you ever played a gay character?
I don't think so.
Do you want to?
Sure.
I mean, you're not going to turn down a role, right?
No. I don't think I have. It's not presented itself. I didn't pursue theater as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the cartoon world, it's not a lot of it. Not a lot of it there.
I mean, yeah, we're recording this just as like Arthur has had a same-sex wedding on it and making a lot of headlines. It's like it's the first time a children's television show has a gay wedding, and yeah, there are vanishingly few those opportunities.
Yeah.
Where did you learn, like, about gay community? Like, you said you came back to LA and you were here essentially, like, entering that world in the early, early 80s. And then through the 80s, which must have been an extremely trying time. So
yeah.
How did you learn about what gay community was?
I am still trying to learn what that is. I've never done that very well, to be quite honest.
It sounds like with your parties that you might have found a good crowd. So,
if you were to come to one of my parties and you didn't know who the host was, you would never know it was a gay guy. Mm-hmm. Only because I have never sought out people by their preference. Mm-hmm. The voiceover community is very hetero. Mm. Don't know why, but if I'd had a career in theater, I'm sure it would be a different experience. Also, I'm from LA, so I didn't run away from anything and then plop myself down into West Hollywood, which had I had to run away, I might have entered the community better. Because I never felt a need to, and I didn't fear my environment. Mm. And once I was out, it was like, get out of my way. I'm here. I'm queer. But I always felt like I did. I failed Homo 101. I've always liked women. There were guys that I would go. I mean, I knew, and it's, you know, suit yourself. But guys that have no women in their lives, or straight people, that's never been me. If anything, I've tried to go out and get me gay friends, and it's just not organic.
Yeah, like trying to acquire someone on the basis of like, oh well, I just need to meet this quota of gay friends. Like, that's never going to work.
It didn't work. But so many, you know, gay folks have huge, you know, their circles, or that's what they have. Mm. But if you were to come to my party, you'd find mostly straight folk, not by design, but just that was my environment. And I actually once did throw a party where I knew a gay guy and I said, invite a bunch of homosexuals. I hosted a party for a bunch of gay dudes and they took me into their little circle, but it was not organic for me because I had set it up to go purchase some gay friends and it wasn't organic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you keep using that word organic, and it brings us back to like being a tree hugger and like liking the stuff that just grows on its own. And I think that's what friend groups have to do. You can't just say like, I need one of these, like I'm a collector. You can't do it like with your Barbies. Cause you know, the Barbies in this situation, the gay people actually, you know, they have personalities and you know, it's not just something you can dress up and put on a shelf.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, then I think that's a good way to know that like, it's a genuine connection. Like if you're inviting people over and having like lasting relationships. What are the things that like, you know, you've got your lovely like parties and stuff like that. What are the things that bring you joy now?
Those are my favorite things.
Like the people.
Yeah.
People and putting on a show.
And putting the creativity that comes from this silly little lineup of songs and sketches and memories and, and I have a vacation home that I surround myself with friends and we go away for long weekends and play games and guitars and just all that stuff. That's where I get that.
That's lovely. Here's what I'll say though is, you know, I think one of the great superpowers of gay people is how we form chosen families and we decide who's logical for us to have in our lives. And you've done that.
I guess I have. I'm pretty good at that.
I think you are.
At creating, I mean, you'll have to interview my friends to find what they think of my parties.
I mean, if they keep coming back year after year,
it's a pretty hot ticket.
Yeah.
It's a pretty hot ticket.
What? Tell me about, like, you said it was is it like voiceover community or like, is it?
Pretty much because that's where, and also my family, you know.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like sort of what you're bringing to the people in your life is that experience that you had with a giant, you know, massive.
Yeah, most people have never experienced what I've brought to the table.
Mm-hmm. And you've sort of made a family out of the folks who, like everyone else who ran away.
Yeah.
It sounds like you kind of like opened your arms to be like, here, come to me.
Going to the gay bars was never a thing I fit into. I never drank. Mm. Even when I left the Mormonism thing, I just never developed a taste for alcohol. And so going to bars can be kind of boring if you're not, you know, if you're not drinking.
That's the thing. I don't drink either. And like, it's like one of our only refuges.
Had I known back when I was in my 20s that I needed to take an edge off, I might have had a better time.
Do you think, I don't know, like you take, bringing back to like Pippin and stuff, like what are the things like when you saw that, that show, what would you like today want to tell the you sitting there in that audience about what's in store? What would you want that you to know?
I'm at a loss. What would I like him to know?
What would you recommend for him to check out next? Like, okay, you like Pippin. Here's what you have to see. Here's what you have to read.
Let's see. Well, my, one of my favorite books was from high school, mm-hmm. called Sticks and Stones. Mm-hmm. It's the title comes from the little poem. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Mm-hmm. Well, this is about how that's not true. This was in my psychology class. My psychology teacher had one of those tourney things with paperbacks in it. You know, what do you call it? Those, where are all the books? And it's on a spinning thing.
Oh, like a carousel, like a book carousel thing.
Like a book,
thing.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
And I saw this book, and it's a book by, her name was Lynn Hall. Mm-hmm. And it's about a rumor that this guy, and this is like 1971 or something, mm-hmm. this rumor that these two guys are gay. One's an older guy outside of high school. He's older. Mm-hmm. And a high school boy. And the friendship that they develop, and they become inseparable. But another boy gets mm-hmm. jealous and starts this rumor. And how their lives are turned upside down by this. But, you know, spoiler alert, it ends, and it is not judgmental at all, and the moral of the story is be accepting. Well, like I've picked it up. My niece gave it to me, found it on eBay, and bought it for me. And I weep when I read it, and I would like to go back and beat that boy. Mm. But that was my favorite book as an adolescent, and I just wept. Mm. As a child, I would say my favorite book was called A Song for Clowns, which is about minstrels during the Renaissance. And that book was written by Barbara, I think her name is Wersta or Werspa, I don't know how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And it was about finding your joy, and that music can free you, and be a minstrel, my son, and all the world is yours, all the fa-la-las, all mm-hmm. the rondelays, and the ballads and the sonnets. And it's a wonderful children's book about minstrels being on the road, pursuing that, and that they want, you know, the old, we must stop music. Music is a bad thing. And, oh, but music is joy. And they're how they save music.
Mm-hmm. This is about pursuing your bliss, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Pippin. It's mm-hmm. it's all of that. As a grown up, Ray Bradbury is my favorite author.
Oh, that's very different. Yeah. That is not an author.
I love all things Halloween.
Sure. Okay.
And his work makes me weep. Mm. The Martian Chronicles.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
Do you know
I read that in high school myself. Yeah.
I have a book of a collection, a huge book of his short stories. And I'm not a science fiction fan per se, but the way he humanizes science fiction, like in the Martian Chronicles, I'm mesmerized by his work. Mm-hmm. You know, I miss the last century. But when you get to be my age, that's... You know, it was simpler. You know the Woody Allen movie, Midnight in Paris?
I've never seen it.
Dude, it's the temptation to the past is always better, prettier, simpler. And mine was certainly glorious. And that's a double-edged sword to come from such magic where everywhere we turned was a song. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, my brother would sit down at the piano and we would waltz. You know, he'd play the Christmas waltz in July. And you would drop what you were doing and you'd grab a family member and you would waltz through the house. Everything had candlelight. Everything, every Easter was an Easter bonnet and new shoes, shiny shoes and a tie. And I loved that and missed that.
You're right that there's a danger in romanticizing something and being like, it was all perfect all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we know that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And also sort of...
But I wish that, am I going to pass this test was still the biggest problem that I had.
Yeah, that's also, looking back, like the problems that we had back then. But then, you know, I hate to say it, but nothing lasts forever and times change. And, you know, you got to be flexible. And hopefully, like, along with older, preferably, you know, knock on wood, comes wiser. And
that's overrated.
Who needs wisdom? I'd rather be young and stupid. I mean, I say jokingly.
Because how old are you?
Yeah, 40.
Yeah.
So You know, I'm right there in the middle of things.
You're right in the middle of things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will say right
where
before
you start looking back as much as forward. It's it's not all forward.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 15, when you're 22.
Mm-hmm. Literally before I came on this trip to LA, two things happened. One is over the last few months, I've been growing my hair slightly longer than it's been in 20 years. And I think that there might have something to do with reaching 40, might have something to do with like changing.
That's
my
when
hair.
I started. Yeah. I started my toy collection a little sooner, but
okay. You start thinking about like literally when I was in high school, I had like long hair and I've had short hair from basically the age of 19 to 37 and 38, maybe 39. Something changed. And then like also before I came on this trip to LA, like I'm here to do like a lot of like stuff related to my job. And I've just been feeling this crisis of like, yeah, but why am I doing that? And like, I'm the only one who can answer that. So, you know, I gotta keep asking myself until I can find an answer. And I think the answer is you, like you said, you chase your bliss. You find, you know, you sing that, what was the book? The Song for Minstrels or it was not that at all.
Song for Clowns.
Yeah. Yeah. You just keep listening for those clown songs until you find the one that like, you know, the words to.
Yeah. I'll read you a passage if you'd
like. Yeah, please. Absolutely.
Would that work?
Yes, please.
This is an excerpt from my favorite book as a child called A Song for Clowns by Barbara Wurzbach, perhaps you pronounce it. Come, lad, tell me your grief. Have you no trade, no master? I am a free man, Humphrey explained, but I cannot find work, and begging does not sustain me. Of course not. That is why you must cease to starve and start to sing. Before I became a minstrel, I was lean as a crow. Now my belly is full, and the gates of castles are open to me. I sup with lords and ladies, and set their tables on a roar with merriment. I am an expert at the ballad, catch and glee, the rondelay, the pastoral, the madrigal, and all the simple fal-lals so dear to country folk. Why, my very snore is a song, my sneezes most musical. I hiccup in harmony and delight the birds with cheerfulness. Be a minstrel, my friend, be a minstrel. The world is in love with a song. A strolling player, said Humphrey, surprised, but I am unlearned, untutored. Sing truly, said Jasper Lightfoot, and you will find a melody.
That, like, you will find a melody, and then there's the line just
gotta
beginning.
Find my corner of the sky.
Is that your song? Like, what's your melody?
That's my song.
That's it?
Yeah.
Cam, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Cam for joining me. There's lots more song and dance and revelry where that came from. My recommendation this week is to check out Cam's YouTube channel for a bounty of delightful clips. There's footage from old King family specials, Cam's recent holiday party performances, and bits of cultural ephemera dating back decades. Whether we'd know it or not, Cam's been a part of our lives in so many movies and shows and games, but usually just as a voice and usually ensconced in a character. It is fascinating to see these glimpses into the life of a man behind so many familiar characters and voices, and it's incredibly charming to see just how happy Cam is to perform. From grainy black and white footage from the 60s to goofy YouTube vlogs today, Cam's love of the arts, of song and dance, and of bringing joy to audiences is captivating and delightful. And the fact that he can entertain us with a voice that's so familiar makes every video feel like hanging out with an old friend. Thanks again for listening, and thanks to everyone supporting the Sewers of Paris on Patreon. Visit sewersofparis.com and click Support the Show on Patreon to check out the rewards for backers. Also, thanks to everyone who's reviewed the Sewers of Paris on your podcast platforms of choice. Please reach out and let me know what you think of the show on Twitter and Facebook at sewerspodcast@gmail.com. And a reminder that tickets are now on sale for 2 Queens of Adventure live shows in Chicago. Head over to queensofadventure.com for details. The theme song for the show is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.